Good morning. Today is Wednesday, September the 15th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Supervisor in the 5th, Mr. Steve Madrone. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian, and all your listeners. I've got a fire lit under me today.
Oh, well, fire's the operative word. We'll be talking about that, I'm certain. But before we get to there, are you ready for your question this morning?
You betcha. Got my graduation cap on.
All right, here we go. Oh, that's too simple. SOS. You're not going to get that one. Why do we say that something fits to a T?
No idea.
Apparently, something that fits to a T fits as well as if it had been constructed using an engineer's T-square.
Ah, perfect.
That one makes sense. I like that
one. It does.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, useful carpentry tool.
Yes, indeed, indeed. So how are things out in the square and in Eastern Humboldt with the fire and the fires and all of those concerns? Are they kind of moderating a little bit, or is there still a lot of scary going on?
Well, today there's a lot of scary, right, because we've got some potential for lightning coming in far eastern Humboldt, but more likely over Hayfork area, where the Monument Fire is still out of control to a large degree. They've got a lot of containment lines. Everybody's working their heinies off trying to get a handle on this whole thing, and they have it fairly well corralled, but that southwest corner west of Hayfork is still very, very active, and there's supposed to be some lightning possibly this afternoon tonight. I could see a lot of clouds out there driving home.
So with the challenges that are there, as well as some of the challenges that are a little bit east or west of there, is there any thoughts or has there been any asks about the economic impacts to Willow Creek, to Hoopaw, to those communities that are there and the businesses that are in that region also?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about it, and it's certainly real. You add the COVID stuff from last year and this year, and now throw fire and 299 shut down for weeks at a time. It's pretty impactful, absolutely. So, no, there's a lot of talk about that. And, of course, we've got the Knob Fire just up the hill from Willow Creek, just a half mile
right, or
so, and it stretches all the way down to the South Fork of the Trinity River and Friday Ridge Road. And it blew up really big last week. I was out there 5-6 days last week helping out. And, it got really big, but they've got it really well corralled, I think 90% or more contained. And they've really made great progress on that last hot area on the north end of the fire just above town. But the community has rallied Willow Creek Fire Safe Council, and a tremendous amount of volunteers in the community have been, jumping in and clearing areas and fuel-proof, all that. And the Hoopaw Fire Department, Rod Mendez and others, all kinds of folks have been just bringing in everybody they can to get this stuff under control.
Is the county doing anything to assist those businesses in that Willow Creek Hoopaw area specifically? $10,000 grants, loans, things of that nature, just to kind of keep them above water, so to speak, getting through this period of time?
Well, right now, no, because, we're still fighting the fires and trying to get them out, right? So that's the focus, and keeping people safe, structure protection. The good news is nobody's been killed, and we've had almost no structures in the Knob Fire affected, except for maybe one shed or an outbuilding. So incredible work being done by our first responders and firefighters, et cetera. But, yeah, those are all issues that we're going to have to talk about, just like with COVID. We've luckily with that, there was federal and state assistance coming in. Trinity County has declared a disaster because the Monument Fire,
sure, over
100,000 acres, has had massive impacts on Trinity County. But we have not declared a disaster because it's really just there above Willow Creek. So we're going to have to figure out how to help. There's certainly a lot of impact going on.
Yeah, I'm thinking, with the highway being closed
and
all the various challenges and then the lack of the normal summertime drive-through,
right.
I would think some of the restaurants and folks like that, if you wait a couple months, there may not be any need anymore because they may not be there.
Yeah, no, they've been really struggling, and now with this, it's a whole nother hit. And of course, the cannabis community is taking big hits out there too. You can't really sell your cannabis if it's smells like smoke and is covered in ash, right? So, all kinds of industries are being impacted, no doubt.
But the county's not going to take a proactive position on this and just wait for all the fires to, well, I guess, basically the rain season to come through?
Well, as far as proactive, yeah, we're very proactive on trying to make sure that we don't lose lives and property.
No, the economics of the retail community.
That's the kind of stuff that comes into discussion as we get things under control.
Okay, that's understandable. I just was trying to get to that point. Now, what about Blue Lake, you know, the feeder, if you will, on 299? Have you heard anything from those folks about how business has been there?
In Blue Lake?
Yeah.
I don't think they've been impacted severely. You know, most of the through traffic on 299 isn't necessarily stopping in Blue Lake.
Certainly, yeah. I just didn't know if you'd heard rumors or there'd been any discussions or
No. Any
of that kind of stuff at all.
So, no, not on that.
Well, what if...
But, you know, there is a lot of proactive work we need to do. We need the federal government to start really funding, taking care of their roads and their vegetation. There's a tremendous amount of roads out there, and when they were built, they might have been 30-foot wide clearance, which is a great fire break. But with lack of maintenance the last 20 years, those roads are down to 10-foot wide, covered in manzanita and brush. And so
Right. That's
not great. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to fund that infrastructure, not just roads, bridges, and other things, but, you know, where is the funding from the federal government to really take care of these roads and the vegetation on them, creating jobs locally and all that? So a lot of work to be done in that arena.
Friday Ridge Road, is that a county or is that the Forest Service?
That's a Forest Service road.
Okay.
Yep.
You know, growing up, we spent a lot of time up basically gathering wood.
Yeah, it's a major road, paved all the way through almost.
Yeah, but if it's being encroached upon and, you know, that kind of stuff, and it's not it's not a main drag like 299 used to be, you know, where you'd get the square
routes
where the chip trucks and the logging trucks were going through,
you'd
see it would turn into a county lane pretty quickly, or that sensation or that feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Friday Ridge is a very important thoroughfare in that part of the Humboldt County and the community. And it's a major, you know, when there was a fire scar in that area at bottom of Friday Ridge from about 10, 12 years ago. And on Tuesday last week, when the fire was starting to head southeast with the northwest winds, it hit that manzanita, that 10-year-old manzanita, and it just blew up.
Exploded, yeah.
And literally one day later, it was all burned out like a moonscape and only a couple smoldering logs and a few hot spots. But it was amazing what a one-day difference made up there as far as hitting that. And in some levels, you know, it burned itself out in that corner and didn't have anywhere to go because the fire services, they brought in hundreds and hundreds of people and really got that corner under control.
We'll be back. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, one of the challenges I would think with the fires, as we're kind of talking about that, is now the resource management part of it. You know, does the river have access, yes or no? What are we looking at as far as reforestation or just allowing nature to do what it does? You've got slide potential. You've got the actual burning of the asphalt and the roadbeds and things of that nature. Is there any estimate on what a per-acre average cost is or what the county is looking at? Or is the county even not looking at needing to deal with that kind of stuff, that's all state and feds because of the property ownership?
The Knob Fire burned almost entirely on Forest Service land. There were some inholdings in there And some of those properties also had significant burning. But again, no loss of life, no loss of structures for the most part. So yeah, a lot of the responsibility is going to be on the federal government. And we've really been lacking in resources to really take care of those lands for a long time. So that needs to change. You know, we need to up our ante on taking care of those properties, and that's a tremendous amount of job opportunities for equipment operators, laborers, and others. So I'm hopeful. We're certainly going to be talking with Congressman Huffman and others about how we're going to manage this infrastructure. This is a whole other ballgame, right?
Well, can we go back to the old days? I remember when Jim Davis was in charge of Six Rivers. And, you know, he would say, okay, they would have 250 million to 300 million board feet contracts out each year, and that those dollars help to pay for that infrastructure and pay for the staffing and address some of the issues that you've been alluding to. Are they just not doing it that way these days, or are those dollars all get sent back to Washington to be frittered away however they choose to?
Well, the dollars aren't being generated. A lot of that money was being generated off of large clear cuts, 80-acre clear cuts in the 80s and early 90s. And the funds, the revenues from those logging operations, certainly, you know, there's a lot of jobs and opportunity that was created, but the revenues could be spent locally if they were spent within a mile or two of the harvest area.
Oh.
So what happened is we built a whole lot of roads and landings to then prepare to go into other areas, but then, you know, the bottom dropped out because of environmental concerns with the owls and the salmon and other things. And so now we have this massive infrastructure, but no funding to take care of it. So I was actually back in Congress testifying about 20 years ago about these issues, and the congressman from Idaho asked me, you know, he said, well, the Forest Service was always the cash cow for the federal government. They were one of the few federal agencies that actually made a profit and brought money into, you know, the country's bank account, right? And he said, when are we going to get back to, you know, that and being in the positive? And I answered his question. He called on me because I guess I was the long-haired hippie in the room, and he thought he'd catch me up. And I said, well, you know, Congressman, my wife taught me a long time ago there's two ways to balance your budget, and one is, as you said, increasing your revenues. But the other is decreasing your expenses, right? And so if we don't get all the income because we're spending money taking care of the roads, et cetera, but that prevents flooding and fire and FEMA emergencies and welfare and all these other things, we may be better off as a country losing a little bit of money in the Forest Service budget but taking better care of the watersheds, right? And he's just like, he didn't want to hear that. He turned to the head of the Forest Service and said, well, what do you think? And the Forest Service chief said, well, I agree with Mr. Madrone, you know. So there's a couple of different ways to go about this stuff, right? So we got to think really broadly and clearly about what it takes.
Well, I would think, you know, that you could certainly abandon a lot of the roads, but
but decommission.
Well, okay. But
if you abandon, the culverts blow out. That's what's going on now. They've kind of abandoned them and not taking care of them.
Well, what I was thinking
is picture.
Then you get the canopy growing over, and now you don't have the roadblocks, you just have, you know,
that's right,
more canopy to burn.
That's right. That's exactly right. But, no, there's a lot to be done, no doubt about it. It's just a matter of designing it properly so that we're really getting a plus out of it, yeah?
And so as you look at the forests and the lands that are, I guess, have been getting a lot of attention here with the fires and the potential with the fires, the management or lack of management of those public properties or public lands, I would think it's got to be something very concerning to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, I certainly don't blame the Forest Service personnel and the staff. That's not their doing. It's a budgeting process with Congress, you know, and how they appropriate money or not. And that's really where the rubber hits the road, as we say, or the fire hits the road.
Yeah, I think we can just kind of let that analogy wither and die, okay?
Okay.
What about with the state properties, though? I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about the Forest Service, but the state also has an awful lot of property in Humboldt in our region. I would suspect that they're probably following the same management philosophy that the feds are.
Well, interestingly enough, this year in the budget, there are billions of dollars coming down for fuel reduction work on private properties and state properties. So the state is actually putting their money behind their effort, and that's going to create a huge amount of jobs in our communities. You know, there's so much to do light thinning from underneath, to fuel-proof our roads, deal with failing culverts, all that kind of stuff. So there is a massive investment coming from the state government. In the past, it's been millions, but now we're talking billions with a B, right? So that's coming down over this next year or two, three, and that's going to help a lot.
So I would suspect that that has to be done during the non-fire season.
That's
which
right.
Tends to be the wet season, mm-hmm. which tends to mean that they can't get out to where they need to get to do the work.
Well, there's still a lot of access. There's more than enough work to do. There's no shortage of places that have access in the winter to be able to go in and do the work. So you prioritize. You do your, you know, look at your watershed. You look at your high priorities for evac routes, fire control, other kinds of environmental concerns, and then you prioritize and you start working on the things you can work on. And believe me, there's enough to do for the next 10 to 20 years
where we suspect.
In fact do have access. So that's not the problem.
Fair enough. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, as you look at some of the non-fire issues that are going on in the area, have you heard how the county fair went?
Well, yeah. You know, there's an awful lot of photographic evidence out there about how it went. You know, there was a big push by the fair board to make this happen. They argued that financially it was a big issue. There were some numbers thrown around, but as it turned out, a week or two later, actually, their revenues were quite substantially higher in their bank accounts than was shown. So at any rate, the board as a whole voted to move forward, and they did it by saying, we're going to require everybody to be masked, right, and distanced and whatever. Well, good luck on that, right? So as soon as everybody got in the fair, many people went unmasked. A vast majority of people were unmasked, and there was a lot of evidence of that in photographic stuff. So not cool, not a good thing, especially with the way this stuff's spreading and how infectious this particular strain is. So
that was
a big mistake from my point of view.
Do you see that the county is going to own up to its responsibility for the maintenance of the fairgrounds as being the landlords and the property owners? Is there going to be some of that? Because I know you look at some of the buildings, well, you know, and they just – they just need a lot of TLC and infrastructure and a lot of that kind of stuff that I know it's easy to defer, and then once you defer for a decade, it's easy to defer for the next decade.
Yeah.
But some of those structures are 70, 75 years old.
Yeah, isn't it the oldest continuously running county fair in the state, I believe?
Yeah, the fair is. I don't know about the buildings.
Right.
Could be
now,
also.
You know, that's a complicated relationship, and I certainly don't know all the details. But there is a lot of responsibility probably on both sides there, both the fair organization as well as the county.
So as you look at deferred maintenance just as a general topic for the county, how would you grade it?
Well, I would grade, you know, we've fallen way behind on maintenance of all kinds of facilities, and we've been leasing facilities forever and ever, and that's just money out of our pockets, right? So, you know, the county is putting together a facilities management plan to try and figure out how to turn that around and how to have our own facilities that are state-of-the-art and updated so that we're not just spending money on leases all over the place. So a lot of work to do. Let's take a look at the Garberville Vets Hall, right? That was deferred maintenance on a roof, and it eventually rotted a lot of the building. Well, finally, we made the decision we're going to dismantle that and work towards rebuilding it, because the vets certainly deserve to have their vets hall there in Garberville.
Yeah, I know Michelle's really excited about that, as Estelle was prior.
Oh, yeah. Well, we finally have turned the corner on that after several years of, well, we don't know what we're going to do, et cetera. We'll give you a little room in the new multi-thing over, you know, that they're doing down there, but that didn't cut it for them. So I'm really happy we finally turned the corner and made that commitment. We have to figure out the financing and all that, but demolition will be happening in the near future, I believe.
Are there other buildings that you specifically have, like, on your personal priority list?
Oh, you know, I would love to see us consolidate services better. There's been a lot of talk about that over the years. We've, you know, like Department of Health and Human Services, Public Health, we're spread out all over Eureka, right, which makes it really difficult for customers, clients, and staff even. So you take a look across from the courthouse, and we own that entire parking lot where Public Health is. Well, what if we were to build a multi-storied structure there with a garage underneath and consolidate all those services there? And then we take that lot up at the south end of town where planning is and Semper Virens, and then Semper Virens maybe could get rebuilt downtown, big expense, new laws and regulations to do that. But then we could consolidate all the planning and building and other services with a new building on that lot at the other end of town. Because that's a really disheveled building up there, the old hospital.
Yeah.
Up at the planning and building and stuff. So we've got a lot of work to do. We're trying to prioritize things and identify funding opportunities to make it happen.
Are there dollars available to help assist, either as seed money or matching dollars?
Yeah, there are. It's complicated, but, you know, within each realm, there are different resources that we can hopefully tap, as well as bonds and other things to finance long-term projects.
Along those lines, I know that, you know, you guys rely heavily on staff to get you the information. The CAO's office, how is that going along?
Well, Alicia Hayes is our new interim CAO. She was the deputy CAO, so she knows the system. She knows the job. I think she's doing a really good job. She's reaching out to department heads. We're making progress on departments and people starting to work better together. So I'm very hopeful and very appreciative of her hard work and all of the people in the CAO's office and all the things they're doing, economic development, et cetera. Very, very strong programs being coordinated out there.
Are you on the search committee, if you will, for the permanent CAO?
Well, yeah, ultimately the board will interview and make decisions down the road. We're not there yet, but that is a process that will be occurring.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41. We'll be back with more from Steve Madrone.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, as you look at some of the different challenges that are facing the county, there's got to be a lot of things that you're excited about, as well as, you know, the ones that always tend to garner everybody's attention. What's got you most excited?
Well, you know, I'm very excited about multimodal transportation. We're doing a big study in McKinleyville to figure out how to help pedestrians and bicyclists get safely between Arcata and McKinleyville. Recently there was some data put out that in the last 10 years there have been 80 people who have been killed on the streets of Humboldt County, pedestrians and bicyclists. 80 people in 10 years. Five of those deaths were on the south end of Central Avenue, where you come off the freeway and everybody's going 60 miles an hour up the hill, and there's very narrow shoulders and people are getting hit. So we're working to try and identify solutions to that to improve our multimodal. We also just finished a transit study in McKinleyville to, you know, look at how we can improve transit services for the community. So there's a lot of exciting things going on in that realm that I'm very happy to be a part of.
With those, is there a component on how to at least contain the cost, if not actually cover the costs?
Well, yeah, there are a tremendous amount of grant monies out there for these things. Caltrans and the state are putting a lot more money into multimodal transportation projects. We recognize there's a lot of hazards out there. And our roads shouldn't just be built for cars, right? People need to get around. And frankly, the less income you have, the more likely you might be to be walking or riding a bike. But it's also, all income levels do those things. So anything we can do there will be good. And yeah, there are lots of funding sources out there to help make those things happen.
What about the bus stops themselves? You look at an awful lot of them, and either they're very small, so if you had more than three people there, somebody's going to get wet.
Yeah.
Or they're not existent. You got a bench in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Those types of things that seem to be pretty straightforward, but those are also the things that tend to get damaged and graffitied. I don't know what the defaced.
Sure.
Defaced.
Yeah.
and they are pretty expensive. When you start going through whether it's the materials cost, the engineering cost, the because of the federal stuff, the prevailing wages that are involved, et cetera, pretty soon those bus stops, you're talking about some serious money. But on the flip side, if you don't have a bus stop, you don't have people using the buses either.
Well, that's right. No, the infrastructure that go along with the routes is very important, and making sure that the routes make sense. Like, for instance, right now, the Humboldt Transit provides transit services in McKinleyville. Unlike Arcata and Eureka, which has Eureka Transit, Arcata Transit, we're starting to see a consolidation of those things. I think Eureka Transit is now managed by Humboldt Transit Authority and or Redwood Transit Authority. And so with McKinleyville, the transit comes out of Trinidad West Haven, and it wanders around McKinleyville for a while before it heads on to Arcata. So if you're a commuter, it doesn't really work for you. So we're working to try and see if we can create some new mobility on demand types of things, like the Dial-A-Ride, but Dial-A-Ride, you got to call a day or two ahead of time and schedule it, right? So we're going to try and look at doing some different, more effective ways of being able to provide that kind of mobility on demand, but also possible transit. And then maybe the main transit just stops at one place in McKinleyville, one or two places like it does in Arcata, so that you have inside the city transit, but also between communities. So a lot of work to do on that.
Could you do something as easy as having a budget set aside for Uber or Lyft or any of those various services?
Well, that's the idea. With mobility on demand, it's very much like Uber and Lyft, but instead of it being a private thing, it's run by the government. And so we'll see. There's been a lot of success with this in many communities. And the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Planning has been bringing in consultants and helping us raise money and doing all kinds of good things in McKinleyville to look at that. So we're making headway.
So it's more cost-effective to have government providing those services rather than just...
Well, it depends. I mean, government's not necessarily the best at doing everything, but this is an appropriate role, I think, for them. And, there was all this stuff about Uber and Lyft recently and... contractors or not, et cetera. It gets very complicated. So those cheap things have kind of gone away because of those new laws that have passed, right? It's not as cheap as it used to be. But it's complicated stuff, and we've got to figure out what is the demand for these services and then try to gear what we do to meet that demand.
Well, doesn't Eureka use city cab or city ambulance?
I don't know.
You guys, but for Dial-A-Ride and those various services, perhaps an expansion of the something along those lines or a combination of all three might be the way to make it happen.
Might be. Maybe if we have coal trains coming in, we'll get a great economic boost.
You know, what's really scary is I was talking to a buddy of mine who's in Wyoming, and he said, it could be legit.
There's that kind of money. In the Bay Area ports are full, and they don't want the coal. And so the idea is they'd bring it to the Bay Area and then come back up through the Eel River Canyon with all this stuff. It's like,
And China,
I don't think they understand what's actually going on in the Eel River Canyon.
And China wants it or needs it big time.
China wants it, needs it, but it's pretty dirty stuff, really, when you think about energy production.
Yeah, the number I had heard presented was between 8 and $10 billion.
Well, that's what's being said. You know.
We'll find out. Yeah. Show me the color of your money, buddy.
Is it black? Colored in coal? What is it? Yeah.
It could work. We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Right.
All righty, bud. Hey, thanks for coming by.
You bet. Take care.
Appreciate the time. Thanks, Steve. See everybody tomorrow.